Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin, and our co-host today is Juliet Lamar.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Hello.
Good to have you again.
Yes, great to be here.
Our guest in the studio is an Aussie. She's an actress who you might recognize from the wildly successful indie feature 47 Meters Down, or from cult vampire favorites, The Vampire Diaries and The Originals, and a ton of other wide-ranging media. She has a bunch of stuff currently in production and due out soon, including her first baby.
Yes.
Claire Rhiannon Holt, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Did I say that right?
Rhiannon.
Oh,
I knew
it's
Welsh.
I'm going to have to, it's Welsh?
Yeah.
We looked it up and we were going back and forth whether it was Rhiannon or Rhiannon.
It's a very weird name. And
it's beautiful though.
Yeah, it's nice. I'm thankful that my mother gave it to me as my middle name,
not
my
first
name.
Do you use it ever?
No.
Yeah, well, we'll cross it out. There's this website where you can type in names that you don't know how to say and it says them for you.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. But in the weird computer voice?
No, no. It's Rhiannon. Somebody's voice.
Rhiannon. Oh, it is? Rhiannon.
Yeah. It's, they're actually
there. Well, you know what's funny? I think in Wales they pronounce it like Rhiannon or something weird like that. That was, I don't
that
know what
Welsh.
Accent.
Okay, so you create a little controversy because I went to look it up because I wanted to be goofy and use your middle name,
right?
Which probably nobody
but,
ever
no,
does.
It's fine.
Yeah. And then,
that's why I have it.
Hold on a second. Let me see if I can get it.
Rhiannon.
Oh, yeah. Rhiannon.
Was
yeah.
that right?
Yeah.
Rhiannon.
Okay.
So, and then I looked at the comments, and half the people are like, that girl doesn't know how to pronounce, that's my name, and it's not pronounced that way. And
oh,
other
really?
People are like, no, it's spot on.
I didn't know there was such controversy over
my controversy.
Middle name.
Reminds me of that dress. Is it gold or is it blue? You remember?
Oh,
right.
That was
gold, obviously.
Rhiannon. So,
clearly.
Yeah, if you're listening, just write in. Do you hear Rhiannon or Rhiannon?
Yeah,
let us know. Rhiannon. Anyway, moving on. Okay, you're pretty cool. You were nominated for a Teen Choice Award. You almost played Supergirl in the comeback series. And you're a black belt in Taekwondo. What
yes.
don't we have in common is my question.
Right. That's what I ask myself.
I think people have a hard time telling us apart. Where does this all begin? You're a very unique person.
Thank you, I think.
No, in a good way. Powerful, unique person. Like, looking at you, I'm like, how do I get my kids to grow up like Claire?
Oh, I love that.
So
thank
now
you.
I gave them all the middle name Rhiannon.
Perfect.
Yeah,
that'll do it. That's the
my
only
first
thing you
step.
need.
Where do you come from?
I come from Brisbane, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been in the States for the last 10 years, but I grew up there until I was 20.
Brisbane, is it? It's a capital of something?
Of Queensland, yes.
Right. How was that? What's it like?
It was amazing growing up there. We just played with sticks outside and you know, rocks. And
it's like Fortnite for
right,
today.
Right, I'm exactly. Here. Perfect.
Sticks and rocks. That's mm-hmm. what it looks like.
No, I'm making it sound much
worse. Did you have animals?
It
seems like a land kind of place.
Yeah, it is. It's a big city. It's a smaller version of Sydney or Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the major cities in Australia. But it was amazing. I mean, I'm one of four and we spent a lot of time
ooh, which
outside.
One?
I'm number two of four.
Oh, the first middle child.
The first middle child, yes. I have many middle child problems.
You do?
I don't know, maybe.
My middle child has middle child problems.
Really?
Well, we have two middle childs, but the first middle child, she's turning out great. She has a chance of being like you, but it was hard at the beginning when she was the middle child. It was just like, my first son, I think we have like 10,000 pictures, literally, of his
really?
First year.
Amazing.
And for Dina, we had like 350. And then she found the hard drive that they were on, and like when she was a little toddler, and smashed it. And we couldn't recover it. We had nothing.
She smashed like it because there weren't 1,000 of them?
I guess she was
she
mad.
She knew at an
she's
early
like,
age.
Bam, bam. We actually call her Bam Bam. She's very strong.
She's an overachiever. She could count.
Yeah,
at
yeah.
that age.
That's why I highly recommend being an only child. No competition.
It's true.
So maybe you guys just do that.
So
know?
We've had to like Photoshop her into pictures and have family,
oh, no.
like anybody.
We have that technology. It's great.
Yeah. If not, we'd be totally screwed.
I was just told we don't care about you that much.
That's what it is.
I'm kidding. No, we're all quite close in age, so I never really sort of felt. I don't know. I didn't struggle being a middle child. My older sister is one of the brightest minds on the planet and is a definite overachiever and a wonderful human. So,
did she have a middle name?
Elizabeth.
What?
Yes, Rachel
is that
Welsh? Elizabeth. Don't know what. Where does Elizabeth
British.
Come from? British, maybe.
British.
It's very regal, of course.
Oh,
like
the queen. Yeah.
So I felt a little bit like I was always trying to keep up. But, you know, I had a very blessed childhood. I was very lucky. You know, I grew up playing a lot of sports and I had wonderful friends. And, you know, Australia is a beautiful country. to raise children. So, and I'm from a very, very big family. My dad is one of 10, so I have 45 first cousins. Oh, there may God. Be more now.
Whoa.
Yeah. So we all kind of grew up. Well, the first chunk of us all grew up together. And, you know, our family holidays were big camping trips with enormous tent cities. And
that sounds
it was,
so
it
nice.
It was awesome. Yeah. It was a really, really great
I come
great
from a really
place.
Big family, but there's not a lot of us. We're just big. It's a different
story. Such a bad thing.
Oh, well. So what kind of sports?
So I did Taekwondo, martial arts.
Starting at what age?
I started when I was 13, I believe.
Because you wanted to, or was just...
So my parents wanted my brother to learn martial arts, and he was quite an anxious kid, and he didn't want to go by himself, so I went with him, and I loved it. I loved it.
And you worked all the way through it.
Mm-hmm.
Did he drop out, or he stayed?
No, he stayed with me.
Okay.
I was thinking after the podcast, I'll walk you out, but more for you to protect me.
It's true. I don't know if I've still got it. It's been a while, and especially not right now.
This
I don't know
a,
if I could throw those kicks.
This would be an amazing story.
Might kick in.
Could you imagine my pelvis just frozen?
She's
lucky you're here.
Yeah, I can free that up for you.
You can fix it.
After you protect me from the would-be robber.
Yeah, I loved that. And then, you know, I did a lot of swimming growing up, as many Australians do, and every kind of sort of sport I could.
Swimming for fun or swimming for competition?
Both. Both.
Are you competitive by nature?
Yes.
Since early age?
I think so, yes. More so as I got into sort of my teen years, but I'm quite competitive.
When you're competitive and you don't win, what does that feel like?
So the very first time I lost in a Taekwondo competition because I used to spar, it was heartbreaking for me. And I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't have the skills to deal with loss because I hadn't lost before. Mm-hmm. Now I'm great at it. I lose all the time.
Yeah.
I lose out
yeah.
on every job I want. No.
I can teach you.
You can. Yeah. I'm much better at dealing with it. But at the time, it took a while to develop those skills.
Yeah. And is competitive, is everybody in your family competitive? Where does that come from?
Yes. So I think it comes from my dad. There's 8 boys and 2 girls. Mm. So the boys were... You know, they're all triathletes or marathon runners, or my father does Ironman races. And
still does?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's amazing.
I'm like Tinfoil Man. It's totally different.
I think it's
sponsored
smarter.
By Reynolds.
Honestly, I don't know why he does it to himself. So they've always been super competitive, and I think it kind of trickled down.
They like rubbed off
to us.
Everyone, all 4?
No, you know what? Just my older sister and I. My youngest brother is not competitive, and my little sister, she matches to the beat of her own drum. She doesn't mind at all what is going on around her.
See, that's my third also.
Really?
And my fourth, by the way, he is the laziest in the family.
Really?
And he knows it. He doesn't care. He'll never learn.
He embraces the role.
I think he'll be 35 and never learn to tie his shoes. Right now it's like, Mommy, tie my shoes. If she says no, then Daddy. Then he goes through all the kids.
He's clever.
Yeah, every other kid, he's very smart. He's really smart. He's like me in this way. He is a little competitive, but extremely lazy. Like, that's my MO.
Right. Well.
So, like, if I have to compete, when Words with Friends, my mother wanted to play Words with Friends. She's like, come play Words with Friends with me. It'll build your skills. And I wanted to play, but I don't have time. I'm not that competitive. So I just thought, I don't even know what made me do it. I typed Word with Friends cheat. And there's an app where you put in what's on the board and you put in what letters you have.
Never heard of someone cheat.
Yeah, it gives you the best words. And you actually have to tell it. Do you want extremely hard, medium?
Do you want people to think you're really smart?
Well, no, because if I would use these words,
then they would
like
know.
Chinhua, I'm like, she'll be like, use Chinhua in a sentence. Like,
that's amazing.
I don't know. I hurt my chin. Wow.
That is amazing.
So I had to use like the medium one. But and then I felt really guilty. So I ended up having to tell her. Yeah,
he came clean.
Whoever made that app is making so much money.
Probably.
Yeah. Are there apps to cheat on other games?
Probably. I don't know. Now I want to know.
There must be. There
I'm
must
gonna go
be.
Down a hole.
Yeah,
tonight.
this is you know,
what
tonight's
can
activity.
I cheat on tomorrow?
So, yeah, so he's like me. He's competitive but lazy. So when he was playing, he's like 7 years old and he was playing baseball.
Uh-huh.
I saw him last season. The moment it happened, I saw it go off a giant light bulb in his head. He realized that at his age, the kids aren't really, they don't have the dexterity to throw accurately or catch accurately. So as long as he hits the ball anywhere, all he has to do is run to the bases, not even look at the ball, listen to the coaches at all. He's probably going to be safe at every base and get a home run.
Yeah.
He had like 9 home runs and 1 out. You know, they got lucky.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So star player.
That's what he is. Smarter. Work smarter. That's the fourth one, I think.
Really?
Lazy competitive. Yeah.
He's going to do well in life, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to figure out all the hacks.
It's so interesting to see the different ways people are competitive. Like, right. So I did competitive gymnastics my whole life and did it in college and like national champion. And
wow.
I was never competitive with my other people. I would come in with like an ego of I am the best because I was. Like,
right.
But I was never, if I saw someone do something, I was like, oh, I hope she doesn't fall. You know, I wouldn't say that stuff or I wouldn't think, oh, I have to beat her. I would just say, okay, this is what I have to do in order to beat myself.
Stay in your own lane.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like all just so encapsulated within me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different, I think, when you do a sport like sparring. You right. literally have to beat the other
yeah,
person.
Yeah, you can't really stay in your own lane then.
Yeah.
Got to get right in their lane.
Yeah.
Yeah, needless to say, I didn't do that competitively for too long.
Good.
I got to the point where I was like, do I really need to be beating up other people
yeah.
as a hobby? Probably not. You know, the interesting thing about taekwondo, and I had this beautiful, amazing coach who, and it was such a great thing, and I absolutely hope that my son will learn martial arts at some point because it was an amazing thing for me growing up. But what they taught us constantly was do not fight.
Mm-hmm.
Walk away at every chance that you get. If someone comes and asks you for your wallet, give it to them. Someone tries to steal your watch, you give them your watch. Do not fight. Only use this if it's life and death and you have to, absolutely have to. But it gives you this confidence when you walk around, like, I can walk down the street and I don't think someone's going to mess with me. I know that I'm going to give them what they want and I'm not going to fight, but you look people in the eye and you walk with a certain posture that I think makes people think twice about mm-hmm. targeting you as a victim. And
that's
that was
really
an amazing thing.
Yeah. By the way, can I have your wallet?
I guess. You
know, I don't know how much is in there right now.
And it's so important as a woman, too, you know, like when you're right. walking around. And I think that that's something people can pick up on. So, yeah, that air confidence really can go into any part of your life.
Right. I think it's been so useful. And I'm very grateful that my little brother didn't want to go on his own. And I came with him.
When did you get into acting? How did that come about?
So it actually came about because I was a swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing television commercials to make some extra money.
What does that mean? How do you just end up doing television commercials?
Well,
were you in high
school?
Well,
at first I was a medical typist for my father, and he was paying me $5 an hour.
This
and
is I, when in life?
This is like maybe 14, 15.
Okay.
And
so high school?
High school. And I was like, there's got to be a better way to make money than this. This sucks. I can't even buy my lunch. $5 isn't going to get me far.
And it's boring.
I've got to think of something else. So I did this. I rolled in this screen acting course just for fun. And as a part of it, you know, they suggested at the end, hey, why don't you do television commercials? You seem like you would have fun with it and you would like it. And so I gave it a try and I did a couple. And then
what are the commercials for?
I did Sizzlers.
Oh, in Australia?
Right? Yeah. They're dying out here, but they're...
Right.
Well, not Outback?
No, not Outback. But it was the dream job for me because I ate cheese bread and drank pink lemonade all day long.
Wait a second. Maybe I could do commercials.
Awesome. I was thought I was killing it. I made a couple $100. I was like, I'm rich. And then
that's a lot of medical typing.
And full.
Right. It's true. And much easier than that. I didn't even have to think. And so the commercial agent I had at the time said, look, I know you're a swimmer and I know you play water polo, and we have this audition for a series to play a mermaid.
Oh.
And they need someone who can swim. And I didn't really have any acting experience at the time. Aside from, I'm so out of breath, pregnancy. Aside from the fact that I had failed ninth grade drama. That was my
you always
claim
have
to
good
fame.
Indicator.
Claim to fame. And so I said, sure, yeah, I'll go try. So I made it through the acting rounds by the, you know, skin of my teeth. And then we got to the swimming round, and they said, okay, we just want you to swim. It was a 50-meter Olympic pool. It said, swim as far as you can underwater. I swam the entire length of the pool underwater. And I came up, and I think I had the job.
Yeah.
I don't think they cared about you. Know, they were like, we can teach you how to act, but it's pretty hard to teach someone how to swim like that.
Yeah.
So I got the job, and it was amazing because it was such incredible training for me. I had myself and the other two girls who were on the show with me. We had no idea what we were doing at all.
You're all swimmers.
They kind of learned along the way, but they were more actors.
And you're more swimmer, and it just
right.
kind of came together.
So it merged. And,
it merged and submerged.
And so it was great. You know, it ended up being a show that is still on Netflix today. And
oh, really?
Yeah, I shot it when I was 16.
Wow.
I'm
That's
30
so cool.
now. Don't tell anyone.
I won't.
edit that part out.
it's been amazing. And it was the way I got my start in acting. And, you know, I realized I had always planned on going to university and I really wanted to get my education and this was just a way for me to save money. So I started filming the show in the 12th grade and I would work 12-hour days or whatever and then I would go home and I would study for 4 hours at night and make sure I did all my schoolwork and then I would sleep a few hours and I would get up and I would go to work again. So it was really tough, but I just thought, you know, I'm going to put this money in the bank and then I can go to college and I won't have to worry about it. And then I found out that I really loved it and I wanted to keep doing it. And people go to college to get a job and I already had one, so.
Yeah.
That's true. So you didn't go?
No, I never went.
There you have it, kids. Drop on out.
Still time.
What? Oh, you still might go? Why?
I don't know. I think about that all the time.
Yeah, why not?
What would you want to do? Study.
You know, I look into, I was actually going to do it last year and then I ended up going to China to do a film, but I'd love to go and do the UCLA summer series. They have like classes on neuroscience and psychology and just things that are interesting that, you know, I'm obviously never going to get a job in. No one's going to hire me as a neuroscientist.
But maybe you can walk into a hospital and just say, hey, I'm not really good at neuroscience, but I'm a great swimmer. Maybe I can get a staff job here.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I'll pick up the doctor stuff along the way.
Right. I'll start as an orderly. I'll work my way up. Great.
Where did your acting career go from Mermaid?
So I did 2 seasons of that show and then...
What's it called?
It's called H2O.
Oh, H2O. How appropriate.
Yep, very appropriate. It's actually H2O, just add water, which doesn't really make sense because it's water, just add water.
Right.
So I just leave that part out.
Stephen Wright? Do you know Stephen Wright? That's a joke. I bought powdered water, but I didn't know what to add.
Amazing. Yeah,
there you have it.
There you have it. So I came out to the States and I was completely delusional. And I thought, because this was the first acting job I'd ever auditioned for, I thought they were all like that. Mm. And you just got whatever you...
Just hop in the pool and swim.
Yeah, you just got the job. And so I came out here and I had a rude awakening.
Oh.
And realized it didn't quite work like that. Mm-hmm. And
did you come straight to Los Angeles?
Came straight to LA.
I mean, it's the first island you come to.
Right.
Yeah.
Really? From your part of the world?
Right.
Was it weird getting used to seasons and time being the opposite?
Yeah, it was different. It was different. I was still young and naive enough to just be a little reckless and not care about where the huge change that was taking place in my life and like the real gravity of what I was doing at 20 years old. Because I didn't have any friends. I didn't know anyone. I had a suitcase and I had no idea how I was really going to live or make money. I just figured that I would work it out.
That sounds like me at 44.
I think you're doing pretty well.
No, I have one friend. it's on Facebook
and whatever. So it was difficult sort of for that first year because, needless to say, it didn't work the way I thought it did. And I had to audition and I got a lot of no's. I think actually I did 144 auditions before I got my first job out.
Really?
And that was at a time where, you know, it was constant and it was different than it is now. Getting auditions, you know, you can just send self-tapes in now. You used to have to go every day and, you know, it was really tough. And there were times where I thought, oh, gosh, what am I doing? I made a terrible mistake. I need to just go back.
Learn how to type.
Go to college. You know, I tried. And then I got my first little job, and then I got another one, guest starring a couple episodes on this, and then maybe a year and a half into my time here, maybe 2 years, that was when I booked The Vampire Diaries, which at the time was just a 3-episode guest star, and I just figured I'd go to Atlanta for a couple of episodes, and it would be great, and you know, I was just working my way up and trying to figure it out, and it turned into 7 years.
Okay.
So it was really awesome, but it was difficult to get there, for sure.
Well, that's your persistence. Yeah. During that time, are you doing like acting classes and
I'm working with coaches and also, you know, I didn't really I couldn't work because I didn't have a green card at that point. I was just on a visa. So I was, you know, living by the skin of my teeth on, you know, eating omelets and cereal. And, you know, I think there was a point where I maybe got to $100 in my bag. I had an old Volvo that like rattled when I drove and the key didn't really work and you'd have to like rig it to get into the car. Thankfully, I had a black belt in taekwondo, so on a street at night, I wasn't too worried. But it was hard. I really got very close to not being able to stay.
So what kept you here, staying?
That competitive nature, I believe.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, and I remember there was one time I was sitting on a bus stop. I was 21, just turned 21, and it was on Sunset Boulevard, and I was just bawling my eyes out on the bus stop. And I just thought, what am I doing? I've made this huge mistake. I've got to go home. Like, I can't keep doing this. And then something inside of me was like, you know what? You can't quit.
Yep.
You just got to pick yourself up, dust off your knees, keep going. And really soon after that was when, thankfully, I started working. And up until now, it's been a pretty steady stream.
You know, I always think of auditioning as like door-to-door vacuum salesman.
Totally.
Like you have to knock on 100 doors or 150 doors and get them slammed in your face and still dust yourself off, pick yourself up, go to the next door as if this is going to be the sale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And give it your A game, and then it gets slammed on your face and do it again. And then 150 times later or 75 times later, you sell a vacuum.
Yeah, and you got to try not to get bitter in that time period or resentful or lose your passion for it or the spark or whatever excited you in the first place, which can be difficult.
Yeah, what is it that you like? Because you seem to be passionate about acting, like you really like acting, not just the gig of it. But
yeah, you know, I've thought many times, how do I explain it? Because I'm not really sure. And I come from a very academic family. Hmm. And it's difficult to explain this thing that comes over me. But it's like a fire, like a warmth inside of me when I'm doing it. And I feel energized and invigorated. And like when I go home at the end of the day, I go to sleep smiling. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that is other than passion. And I don't know where it comes from. But I do know that when I'm not doing it, I really miss it.
Oh, Have you done theater as well?
I actually haven't, and I'm incredibly in awe of theatrical actors and actresses because I think that that's far more difficult than television or film.
That's
and
interesting.
It's, you know, you do it every day, you know, day and night, and you have to bring that same level of energy and performance every time, and you know you can't mess up. And so I think it's much more difficult than.
Well, you can. You just
There's so many unknowns.
They just can't know that you've. Because I was a drama major in college.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
amazing.
But theater only. And I, when you were talking about loving to do it and having that fire in your belly and just the passion, I loved it.
You did.
But there was the audience, and it was instant. Even though you put a lot of work into getting ready for a show. Like in the show, you see the feedback right there in front of you. It's instant. And there is that live theater kind of, stuff goes wrong all the time. And it's just, how do you recover from it without anybody knowing that something went awfully wrong?
Which is incredible skill.
But also part of the wonderfulness of theater as well is are you so prepared and do you have enough guts to recover in a way that keeps the story going?
Exactly. And then you don't lose it for the rest of the performance.
For the rest of the performance.
And get in your head.
Yeah.
Oh, I never forget playing a drunk Santa Claus. And there's this big moment where I'm center stage and there's five steps and there's thunder and lightning, crashing thunder and lightning. And I fall onto my butt and bounce down those five steps and land on the floor like I'm having a heart attack. Very dramatic. And I practiced it so many times how to do it without injuring myself.
Right.
Again and again, I got really good at it, right? And then the sound guy, right before that cue, somebody leaves and the door closes behind him, but there's no real door. So there's just a little click for the door closing. Uh-huh. The sound guy forgot to do the click. So I'm standing center stage and I'm ready for my big moment. And instead of thunder, there's a click, but I don't realize that it's just a click. So I start bouncing down, clutching my chest. And all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, my God, that was just a click. And I'm laying there clutching. And then all of a sudden, the thunder comes and I have to outdo that. But that's part of live theater.
But you nailed it.
The worst one I had was my dress split in the middle of a scene.
Oh, no.
So it was like a six-person show. So you're constantly on stage. I had like two exits the entire play. And we just did the scene. We're like panging on things and then like come up. And my dress just rips below my butt, like all the way down. And I'm like, oh, I feel it. I'm still on stage for like another 10 minutes. I have to tell and figure out how. And I'm acting weird. My blocking's all off because I'm like trying just not
blocking.
To turn around.
You could have just showed the audience.
Exactly. I could have rave
showed
it.
Yeah, the next night filled people out the door, scalping tipping.
It was crazy. But yeah, I had to kind of signal and I kind of went over to my co-star and I was like, oh, you know, and kind of put her hand there and she was like, oh. And so we put the whole thing, but we had to do it all. And you have to rely on your co-stars at that time to save your butt, literally.
That's a lot more difficult than what I do.
Somebody skips like five pages of dialogue.
Yeah. And you look at them, and you're like,
you guys are not selling theater to me.
Oh, no, but that's part of the...
That's why we do
it. The rush of it.
The rush, yeah. It's the improv of it.
I would much rather do TV and film because they can yell cut, you mess up, it's okay.
You can go have a snack. It's fine,
you're sick, you voice it over later, like whatever.
It's true.
All right. Well, now you're all prego.
I am all prego.
And there's a lot to talk about there, but we're going to take a very quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk to Claire Rhiannon.
Rhiannon.
We're going to talk
it's
to gonna Claire
It's going to be one of those things you're going to say wrong for the rest of your life now.
I want to get it right. It's like Anne. You're Anne.
Rhiannon.
Claire Rhiannon.
Rhiannon.
It's just Anne for short.
Yeah.
Claire and Holt. We'll be right back. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, it's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast. We're back with co-host Juliet. And our guests, Claire Ann Holt.
Claire Ann, my mom's name is Ann, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe, do you think that's why she named you Rhiannon?
No, I think she liked the song.
Is there a song?
Rhiannon.
Not that one.
Not that one.
No, but I like that. I'm going to use that now.
Yeah.
So say that's what I'm named after.
That's going to be in my head for at least 2 days now.
I know me too.
So Claire, I can't help but notice your bump.
Yes. It's there.
It's there. Not quite as big as my bump, but we'll get back into that at some other point.
You want to compete and measure?
I would not compete with you because I know I'll lose.
You will.
It's not worth it. I'll get my little son to compete with you, though.
I'd love that.
He'll figure out a smart way to get a bigger bump. So pregnancy. First of all, how did you meet your partner?
We got set up through a mutual friend, a guy friend of mine, actually, and I was not looking for a relationship at the time. But he said to me, look, just come out and have a drink. I know you can stay for one drink and go home. And I was miserable and cranky and didn't want to go out. And I agreed because he'd been such a good friend to me. I'd go out for one drink. And thank God I did because I met my lovely husband. And it was very immediate. Maybe the first week. I was still a little standoffish.
It wasn't like halfway through your drink.
No, it wasn't halfway through the drink. It was halfway through the fifth drink probably.
Oh, okay.
No.
So later that night.
Within, you know, a month, we sort of knew that that was that.
What about it? What makes you so sure? Was there a fire in your belly?
It was like the fire I get when I'm at work. It's very interesting. It was for both of us, I think, just an immediate like connection and like a soul connection and something that was really beautiful and special. And, you know, I feel so lucky that I went for that drink that night.
Wow.
I can't believe that I nearly stayed home.
I'm going to not turn down drink offers anymore.
Ever.
You know,
again.
My mom has a saying, and she said it to me ever since I was a kid, and it's get up, dress up, show up.
Mm.
And you can go home if you want, but you just got to show up. And so I always used to say that to myself whenever I didn't want to do something. I didn't want to go to an audition. I didn't want to try something new, put myself out there, go out for a drink, go to this dinner. I was always like, okay, I just have to go, and if I'm having a bad time, I can go home. And so that's, you know, been my motto throughout my life and
but those
served
are really
well.
Powerful little snippets that your parents put into you.
Because
I heard one also from your dad, which is, did you tell me? Or?
Yeah, maybe my sister. Pain is weakness leaving your body.
Oh, I love that one. I've heard that before. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are like really powerful when you need to do something and that you don't really want to do and get through something that seems uncomfortable or undoable.
It's great. You just repeat it to yourself over and over.
Do you have one for your birth?
I think that's going to be
pain is baby leaving the body.
We're going to name the baby.
I don't know if I want to refer to him as weakness, though.
Yeah, I know.
No, but it's baby leaving the body, not weakness.
Right.
That's his name.
So I don't know.
Weakness has left the body.
Oh, poor little guy.
When did you start thinking kids?
Really quickly, which is not like me at all.
Six drink?
No, we sort of started talking about it maybe within like 2 months of being together.
Wow.
Yeah.
You guys move really fast.
Yeah, we did.
You really wanted a fire in that belly.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really funny because he said something to me the other day that was so beautiful. And he's so excited about this baby. And he just said to me, I think I was born to be a dad. And it just is, it was so special to me. And I know that he's felt that way for a long time, and he will be the most incredible father. But he really, he was on board. You know, he was so excited about it. And so very early on, we decided. And I guess it could have gone terribly, but thankfully it's been a beautiful, wonderful experience. I couldn't imagine doing it with another partner.
Had you thought previously about motherhood?
Not so much. No. I knew I wanted to have children. And I knew that hopefully one day that that would happen to me. But I had always been so career driven mm-hmm. that I thought that it would happen later in life for me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't think a lot about my fertility. And mm-hmm. so I just thought, well, I'll just do it when I'm, you know, if I start at 35, that's the age.
That's the deadline,
they say.
Right?
Yeah. You know, just by the time I'm 35, it'll be fine.
It's industry standard, really.
Right.
It is really industry standard.
Right. So I hadn't thought so much about it. And then it just felt really right and really natural. And it was this immediate, like, knowing, I think.
Did it take long to get pregnant?
So I came off birth control at the time, very early. And then it took me a long time to get my period. So I'd been on it for 13 years, and I didn't get my period for probably 6 months.
Oh, wow. Was when that frustrating to you?
Yeah, it was, because it was something I couldn't control. And mm-hmm. I'm very type A, and I like to be in control of things. So it was very frustrating to me because there was nothing I could do. I felt like I was doing everything I could. I was having the acupuncture, and I was changing my diet and trying to do all the things that they tell you that, you know, naturally regulate women's cycles. But it just didn't happen for me. And then when it did finally come, and it ended up coming because I did something called a progesterone challenge, mm-hmm. which is where you take a course of progesterone and then you come off it, and the withdrawal should trigger a period. When it did finally come, I got pregnant the second cycle. So,
wow.
Okay, first of all, there's probably nobody ever happier in their life to see their period start.
Yeah, I was thrilled.
At that moment.
I was thrilled.
Yes!
I was really thrilled.
It's here.
That second cycle, we were beside ourselves. Like, we were so thrilled. And it was just
how'd
like,
you find out?
I had started to feel a little sick. I remember going to pick my husband up from the airport, and I pulled over and the side of the road and puked.
Oh, wow.
And it was like 3 days before my period was due or something. And I was like, this feels a little early, but that's strange. I don't normally do that. And I was feeling nauseous for a couple of days. And then I started to see these ads on TV, which I'd never seen before for pregnancy tests.
They've always been there.
Is this a sign? I don't know what this is. Anyway, so finally, you know, I bit the bullet and there were people downstairs. I don't know why I decided to take the test when people were over, but I did. And, you know, it was positive straight away. And so I called my husband up and he was just so excited and we were both crying and thrilled and couldn't believe it and didn't really know what to do next and what we were supposed to do. And it was very, you know, foreign to the both of us, but it was amazing. And so for the next few weeks, I think we had our first doctor's appointment around 6 weeks and we got a heartbeat and there was no reason to think that anything was going to go wrong and it was really healthy and, you know, we were thrilled and excited. And I didn't feel terrible. I felt a little nauseous, but I didn't really have typical like first trimester symptoms at that point. And then a couple of weeks later, my gynecologist at the time didn't deliver babies. So I was looking for another doctor. And we went to another doctor a couple of weeks later at 8 weeks. And he said to me, the baby's measuring small. Don't put it on Facebook.
Hmm. Whoa.
And you know, it was just like so shocking to us because I had no idea what that meant. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Do some babies measure small? What do you mean don't put it on Facebook? Do you mean just like wait because everyone should wait? Or like, is there a problem? Does this mean something? What's the heart rate? And, you know, the tech was like, well, it's there, but it's low. And but they didn't really tell us anything.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
And did you have those questions in the moment or they were
I think both of us were just so shocked and confused because we had no reason to believe that something was going wrong. I had mm-hmm. no bleeding. I had no cramping. I'd had a heartbeat a couple of weeks before with my gynecologist. So we were just confused. So the doctor said, you know, well, I'm going to draw some blood and we'll see where we're at. And, you know, maybe you can come back in 2 weeks or whatever. It's like, 2 weeks? I'm good. What? That's too long. I can't possibly wait that long. Can I? He goes, well, you can come back in a week if you want. So.
Wow, so touching.
Yeah. So we went outside and I took the blood. And that was actually a really horrific weekend. And it was a Friday that happened. And I would almost say that was equally as hard as what we went through after. Because it was the first time that we ever really thought that something may not go right. It was actually this time last year. It was Super Bowl weekend.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So for that weekend, I just remember feeling like this sense of like, oh my God, what have I done? Have I done something? Did I, like was this my fault? Should I not have gone running? Should I not have exercised? Did I eat something bad? Was it because I wore perfume? Is it because I had a glass of wine like 2 days before I found out I was pregnant? I've done something. And so I really had to focus on like getting out of that place and just like trying to hope that things would be okay. And then the next week I went back to the gynecologist who doesn't deliver babies but is just a beautiful, beautiful woman and said, just come back in. We'll check again. Let me check and make sure there was still a heartbeat. She said, look, it's a little bit small, but this happens. Sometimes we get the dates wrong. You know, just don't give up hope. Just hang in there. So 2 weeks after that, then we got to 11 weeks and we went in for what would be the genetic blood test. And I don't know if maybe she had an idea that because it was measuring small, she should do another ultrasound, because I don't know if it's common to get that many ultrasounds. And it was my husband's birthday, sadly. Oh my. And we went in and immediately there was no flicker and I saw it straight away.
Oh, wow.
And I knew to look for that flicker of that heartbeat and it wasn't there. And the first thing I said was, where's the flicker? Where's the heartbeat? She said, it's okay. Maybe I just have the wand in the wrong place. You know, sometimes this happens. You know, of course, after looking for another few minutes, there was no heartbeat. And I said, I want to hear it. I need to know it's not there. And she goes, are you sure that you want to do that? And I was like, yes, I need you to turn the sound on. So she turned the sound on and obviously there was no sound. And it was devastating. I think it was the hardest thing I've ever dealt with in my life. And I've, you know, I had people close to me pass away, which is horrific. But this was something that it felt like that times 10 with the guilt of I couldn't do this.
Being your fault.
Mm-hmm. And so and my husband was just so beautiful. And I can't believe I booked the appointment on his birthday. That was just like such a douche move on my part. But
only in retrospect. I mean,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, you didn't know.
Well, I thought it was going to be a nice, you know, treat to see the baby. But anyway, so we went home and we both cried. And my family actually happened to be in town for my sister's wedding celebration. So my mom was there and my dad was there and my siblings were wow. there. So a lot of people were around and it
so did they all know you were pregnant?
They knew I was pregnant, yes. Oh. I told them I can't keep a secret.
Yeah.
So well, I can if it's important. I couldn't keep that secret. So they knew I was pregnant and they were all there when, you know, we told everyone.
So that's a little different because a lot of people don't tell anybody.
Right.
And then they're totally alone.
Right.
I mean, was it helpful to you to have support?
Yes, and
already?
That's something I'm so passionate about now. I don't understand why you would have to suffer through that alone. And I understand some people have, you know, personal preferences and they like privacy and they don't like to talk about things and maybe it's better for them to cope if you don't share. But it feels really sad to me that we would have to like get to this point in a pregnancy, God forbid something did happen, then no one has to know about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as opposed, why can't we tell people when we're 6 weeks, 8 weeks and share in the celebration and the excitement and then have a shoulder to cry on when something doesn't go right, you know?
Did you know anybody who had a miscarriage before that?
So I had a few friends who had had them. My mom had actually had two, but she'd never talked about it in a way that was that it was incredibly traumatic. Mm. And I know in hindsight it really was for her,
mm-hmm.
but she hadn't shared that with me. And the friends who had had miscarriages hadn't really shared how traumatic it was with me. It had been like I knew about their pregnancies, they lost their pregnancies, and then I didn't know what to say. They didn't know what to, that no one really talked about it. And it was something that I, at the beginning, I always knew I was going to share at some point. Because I immediately went to the internet when I got home and I just started Googling. I had a miscarriage. Well, how do you cope? What do you do? Is it my fault? Skills. How do I get through this? How do I can't believe I've done this to my husband. He just wanted to be a dad and I couldn't give him that. You know, I was just desperate for a community. And I found just some amazing resources and some amazing women who were really open and vulnerable about it. And so I knew that at some point when I was ready, I didn't know when that was going to be, that I would share my story too. But, you know, for the first sort of week to 10 days, it was like just so dark for me. And I think probably 3 to 4 days afterwards, and I don't know if this has anything to do with the hormone drop or what happens, but I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't. My husband sadly had to go away for a few days for a really important work trip. and I just wouldn't even answer his phone calls. Oh, you know, wow. And I just, like, my family was still there, and I shut my bedroom door, and I couldn't come out, and I didn't know how to talk.
So strong.
Yeah. And then, you know, it started every day, like, it would get a little bit better and a little bit better, but it was still really horrific to me. And then I think it was about 10 days after the miscarriage that I decided I was going to post something. And I sat down on my computer, and the words came out of me. And I didn't really think about it. And it just was as if, I don't know where it came from or who it came from, but it felt like something that was very important.
We are going to take a quick commercial break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Was that cathartic for you?
Yeah. Really cathartic, but I was terrified about it. I was terrified to share it with so many people. I was terrified of feeling ashamed and that people would think it was my fault. I was terrified that people would think, you know, oh, you haven't been with your husband long. I can't believe you got pregnant, or, you know, like, crazy things that and I found none of that.
Wow.
I found the most beautiful, incredible support system from everyone, from every walk of life, from women, from men. So many men reached out to me directly or in the comments, sharing their story and talking about what it meant to them and, you know, how difficult it was for them to watch their partners or sisters or wives go through it. So many women. I think the post has over 40,000 comments.
Wow. Comments. I mean, you're just so, I mean, you're very likable in general, and
Thank you.
You're very real.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, just speaking from, I'm like, my eyes are welling up just hearing you talk about it. And, you know, our first pregnancy ended in miscarriage also, but we didn't know anybody else who had had one.
Really?
Like, why us? Like,
yeah, that's what you feel like. Why me?
And then this morning, someone walked into my office and she's pregnant now and midway through pregnancy. And we were talking during her intake and she's like, yeah, but I had a miscarriage and it wrecked me. And you could see her just stop for a second.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I really appreciate it. We've had a few people come and talk about their experience, but most people don't. So I'm really grateful when you do. And you're just so genuine that I think even probably some internet trolls left positive feedback.
You know? Thank you. Yeah, it's something that I think I've healed from because I shared and because I didn't feel alone. And that's one of the things that I think is so awful about going through something like that. If you don't share and if you don't have the knowledge and if you don't know how common it is, you feel really isolated.
Yeah.
And
you keep blaming yourself. I'm pretty sure
you
should do 23andMe. There's probably at least 5% Jewish in there. It's a lot of self-guilt.
I do. I have like 1% Ashkenazi Jew.
I know.
Nice. I do. But yeah, there was a lot of that. And I think it's just such an important thing to talk about because after I did, I connected with so many women who had been through the same thing and who had found it equally devastating. And I think there's this misconception that because you never met the child, that you didn't feel connected to it, or you didn't feel like a mother, or you didn't, or the loss wasn't as significant. And I just think that that's so far from the truth because it felt more significant to me than any loss in my life. And, you know, that's not to underplay some of the losses I've had because I've had very amazing, incredible people pass away. But this to me just felt so much heavier and so much more difficult to manage.
It's a piece of you. It's like, you know, this is your soul and heart and body. You're going into this thing. And then it's,
yeah, and you know, the second you become pregnant, I feel that you become a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, you go back and you're not one anymore.
I do sometimes, like now that you're pregnant, towards the end of a pregnancy, you know, I sometimes wonder, in the introduction even, I was going to say she's expecting her first baby, but maybe you feel like it's your second baby.
You know, I say it's my first, but I do feel that way. Mm-hmm. And I also feel that we get the children that we're meant to have.
Mm.
And I feel that I wouldn't have met this little guy if that pregnancy had gone ahead, and there must be a reason for that. And, you know, I found more of a spiritual outlook as I've gotten further away from it and more distance, and I've healed more. At the time, there was none of that. There was just anger and frustration. I didn't feel a sense of spirituality. I didn't feel connected to myself or anything greater than me. I was just mad. And through the healing process and allowing myself to grieve and connecting with other people And having time and distance and space, I've gotten to a place where I think, you know, there was a reason that that happened to me. And as awful as it was, I wouldn't change it. And it's really hard to say that because I don't mean that in a way that, like, I didn't want that baby or I didn't want that life. But I've learned so much, and I think that I now can hopefully help other people through this journey. And that's really important to me.
I sort of have a little flashback to interviewing Kat Von D on the podcast. And mm-hmm. I asked her about her first tattoo, and it was a J for some guy whose name started with J. And she says, but now it stands for just kidding. And I was like, do you ever think about just taking it off, you know? And mm-hmm. she's like, no, it's like my body is my canvas of my life. Every piece is important to me. It got me to where I am today.
Right.
And that's kind of what I hear you saying also about yeah. that experience. And where you are today is third trimester.
Third trimester. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And okay, first of all, have you had any pregnancy cravings?
Bell peppers.
Really?
It's so weird. I cannot get enough of red bell peppers. In fact, I ate two before I came here.
I ate one like an apple on the way here, actually, which is really weird.
You did?
Yeah.
I've never had anyone eat
like that.
That's
like the Iron Chef guy. He takes that bell pepper.
I was driving and
eating it.
Well, now you're
weird. And now she's like, oh, my crap, my pregnant? No.
I cannot get enough of them.
Oh, really?
Enough
they're good.
Raw, doesn't matter.
Raw, has to be raw.
Has to be raw. Just red or any color?
I've been going for the red. I'm mm-hmm. sure I could tolerate the orange.
But greens, though, like no.
No.
No. Who even eats green peppers?
No, no one. They should get rid of them.
How has pregnancy been for you compared to how you thought it would be?
You know, it's been such an interesting journey, and I think it is definitely because of my experience with the miscarriage. Mm-hmm. I had a very hard time connecting at the beginning, and I've been... I don't want to say crippled with anxiety because that's not fair, but I've really had to tackle a lot of anxiety through the process. You know, the first trimester I was really, really sick, which they say is a good sign, but I just kept thinking to myself, if I have to go through all this and then I lose this baby again, I don't know if I can do this. Mm-hmm. I don't know mm-hmm. if I can do it again. And then, you know, I got to the genetic test and everything was okay. And then I got to 14 weeks and everything was okay. And I just had told myself, just got to get to that point and then I'll be fine. And then I won't be anxious.
And then you can post on Facebook.
And then I can put it on Facebook. And then actually when I did post and share the news of my pregnancy, I got this overwhelming fear after the fact.
Like, yeah, I would.
It's out there now and I can't take it back. And what if something happens? And, you know, so I got through that. And then I got to the 20-week scan. And then I was like, I just need to get there. And then I can see that everything's okay. And I can see that his heart works and he's got five fingers. I hope he has 10.
On each hand.
On each hand. 10 fingers and 10 toes. And then I, of course, read some article somewhere and all of a sudden became terrified that he was going to have intrauterine growth disorder or whatever. Which is like yeah. not, why would I think that? So that was my thing. And then, you know, once I realized he did not have that and he was, in fact, a very large baby, you know, it became, sadly, stillbirth. And once I hit my third trimester, I started to worry about stillbirth and what is the rate of stillbirth and, you know, is there anything I can do to prevent it? And is it, I slept on my right side last night and, the studies say that, I woke up on my back and the studies say that you can't do that and this, you know.
And so, this is not really you.
No.
As this is like opposite Claire.
Yeah, it's really not me. And I've had to work very hard to get out of my head like that, to stay away from Dr. Google, because that's never a good idea.
I know. He's open 24 hours and yep. speaks 72 languages.
It's crazy.
Horrible. Yeah.
He shouldn't be so available.
No. It's the only doctor that's available sometimes.
It's true. So. Yeah. It's true. So I've really had to work hard to get out of my head and just be present in this journey. And, you know, I had a hard time connecting up until, I'd say, about 25 weeks. I tried to and I wanted to, but I just, you know, I didn't start the nursery till quite late because I was superstitious and I didn't want to have to unpack a nursery. You know, all these really sad, morbid things that, you know, the chances are it's never going to happen to me. And but I just have this experience and this fear that sort of simmers underneath everything.
I mean, Alyssa and I went through all those same yeah. exact things in our pregnancy that led to our son. Even after that, even holding him didn't make it feel quite real.
Really?
Yet. We were still wondering, like, okay, he's here, but what's going to happen next? Mm-hmm. You know, I remember the first time he slept 5 hours straight. We woke up and we should have been the happiest people on the planet. We both jumped out of bed and ran to his room.
Terrified.
I was like, how come he didn't wake up and cry? And,
yeah.
You know, after that, I think we started to let go a little
you
bit.
You did?
Yeah.
I hope that's the case for me. Yeah. I can see myself still at 18. I haven't had some hair now. Where are you? What are you doing? Yeah, no, I can't let myself buy one of those like owlet socks or anything. Oh, because if the alarm goes off, I'm going to be
and
like...
I have a lot of false positives and false negatives.
Right. So. I'm so... It's.
I want the owlet sock for me, though. I'm always,
I know, I wouldn't mind it, actually. It's a great idea.
Owlet senior. Birth. What do you have in store for birth?
So right now he's head down, which I'm thrilled about. I would love to have a... unmedicated vaginal delivery.
Whoa. You guys don't say vaginal?
Do we say vaginal?
I don't know.
Do you?
Probably. I've been here long enough. I say some things like Americans now and then other things I say like an Australian.
Okay.
Like stupid, I've been saying a lot.
Stupid.
Instead of stupid.
Yeah.
I would love that. I don't know what's going to happen right now because my doctor is going on a mission to Guatemala to save babies. How dare she?
Yeah.
Shame.
Right over my due date.
Awful person.
It's on purpose. It's
so selfish, obviously.
I don't know. Maybe it's full circle, though.
Yeah, maybe. No, she's been so incredible throughout this journey and has been such an amazing tool for me because I have been so anxious. And, you know, she very early on talked to me about her miscarriages and how she was very anxious too and how she was giving herself ultrasounds. Yeah, and she was really, like, open sharing that stuff with me. Yeah. So I feel very connected to her and I feel that I would really like her to deliver my baby. So that's something that, you know, I have another 8 or so weeks to figure out.
Plus or minus.
Buy a
plus
ticket or to minus. Guatemala.
Right. That's true. I didn't think
just
of
go
that.
Go to Guatemala.
There you go. Just show up at a door. I know you're a bit busy, but crowning.
Time for one more?
You're here for babies, right?
I went into this pregnancy thinking I'm definitely having an epidural. You know, I'm come from very medical family. My father's a doctor. My brother's a doctor. My mother was a nurse. My aunt's a pediatrician. My uncle's an orthopedic surgeon. And all of them are very pro pain medication if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's there for a reason. Take the pain meds. You got to break the pain cycle, whatever, you know, when you have an injury or whatever. So I always thought, like, definitely going to have an epidural and I'm not going to feel anything and the baby's going to come out or maybe even I'll have a C-section, you know. My mother had 4. She seems fine. She's very thrilled that everything's still intact down there. Yeah. So I'm sure that seems like an option too.
Yeah.
And then it was a conversation that I had with you, actually, one of our first appointments together where I was asking you questions about birth and labor and you know, what's it like without medication and why would anyone do that and this, that, and the other. And you just really inspired me.
Oh.
And you made me feel like I could do it. And it was going to be a beautiful experience anyway that this baby came onto the planet. But there were some definite benefits to laboring naturally and being able to move around and being connected to the process. And so after our conversation, I went away and I did some more research like I do. Went down another Google hole.
Out to Google.
And I realized, you know, it's something that I wanted to try. I wanted to try and do it naturally. And many, many women before me have done it. And it's, you know, animals in the wild do it all the time. They don't have an epidural.
Yeah.
And so my plan right now is to attempt that.
Try and picture where you'd put the elephant's epidural.
Yeah, where would it go?
I don't know.
On the top?
Let me get it in there. Like, big sit like
needle.
A cat?
Yeah. Could you imagine?
Get employ some monkeys to, like, scamper up the back.
Don't move for 1 minute.
Just like a harpoon.
That's right.
Putting the thing in. Oh, yeah, that might work.
Yeah. Blow dart.
I'm excited about birth. As difficult as it's been for me to sort of get around pregnancy and the lack of control that I have over the situation, I'm excited about what's ahead. I know I'm going to have the challenges of not being able to control birth and not knowing how long it's going to go, which we talked about as well,
mm-hmm.
and not knowing how long it's going to take me to dilate and what the process is going to be in letting go and surrendering. But I feel like it's going to be this beautiful connection with my husband and my baby and all the women that have gone before me and my mother. And it's just something that I'm so, so excited about.
And you have options.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, aiming for that is great. But
right.
You have options. Should you choose something else along the way, there's so many options around you.
Right. So we'll see. I mean, maybe baby number four, I'm going to be birthing in a tub somewhere.
But in Guatemala.
Baby number four. Like, I'm going to do that four times. There's no shot. I wanted four kids before I got pregnant. And then now that I've been through this pregnancy, as much as I love this little angel.
Well, you have to wait and see. When the new car scent wears off, you start to get thirsty for another lease.
Do you though? Yeah. Is that thing real where you forget? Mm-hmm.
Totally. I'm pretty sure that's why your brain shrinks, like where the mommy brain comes from.
Oh, really?
I think that's part of it. Otherwise, you just have like one kid and that's it.
I mean, it makes sense. I know someone who like wrote a list of everything she hated about being pregnant.
So if she ever wanted to get a kid again, she would just read the list.
A reminder.
Refer to list. Oh, that's funny.
Have you been acting during pregnancy?
I haven't, which has been a challenge for me mm-hmm. because I have, ever since those 144 auditions and then my first job, I've been working, thankfully, pretty steadily since. And this is the first time I've taken a break since I was 20.
But you are working around the clock.
Right. It's true.
Set production or reproduction or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's funny. I got a lot of validation from my work. And, I love it. I have such a passion for it. But I also felt a sense of accomplishment that I was lucky enough to work consistently. And so I've had to tackle that side of me that thinks that sitting on the couch cooking a baby is not as valuable, or I'm not working hard enough by doing that. Mm-hmm. And you said something to me very early on, which was, you're working harder in your sleep than probably every man on the planet.
Mm, yeah.
which really helped me.
Also, I attend birth and I watch you guys do this, and it's just mind-blowing every single time, no matter how they come out, you know.
Yeah.
It's just mind-blowing. I still cry pretty much at every birth.
You do?
I'm usually asking for an epidural. I'm like, over here.
The emotions are too much.
It's overwhelming.
Give me the pain meds.
It's amazing how you do it, how your body is able to grow a human being inside you and bring that human being into the world through your body and feed the human being with your body. It's just incredible.
Really, it is when you think about it. So it's been nice to take some time off and focus on this little guy and just, getting good sleep and nutrition and resting and nesting and doing all those things that are important.
Are you exercising? What else are you doing to stay healthy?
Yes, I have been. So not so much the first trimester. I was terribly sick. In fact, I was puking on the way to my honeymoon on the plane, my whole honeymoon, and then back home. We went to Greece. My poor husband had planned this beautiful honeymoon for us. And
So his first birthday, and then
his first birthday. I know, I'm really an asshole.
The other from the honeymoon.
No, he was, needless to say, he was thrilled, and he was totally fine with it. So I didn't work out a lot because I felt so ill. And then the second trimester, thought I was a superhero. And, I had all my energy back. And I was 6 days a week. I was on the elliptical. And I was doing a boot camp and a bar class. And I was like, this is great. I'm going to be one of those women on the spin bike at the day she gives birth. It's not really happening, actually. The last sort of week or two, I've started to really slow down. And I think I'm totally okay with it. I was just saying earlier before you got here, your advice to me was, just do opening and stuff in the last 10 weeks of pregnancy. And today I decided I was just going to do one last bar class because, I have class pass and I've got to use up those classes.
Yeah.
And I pretty much broke my pelvis.
Oh, wow.
No, I didn't. It was not good. And I think
we
that
could
was
always
a,
fix it.
It's true. That was a lesson like, I'm going to stick to walking. I'm going to do my yoga. I'm going to take the time to be peaceful. I don't need to be running a marathon at 40 weeks pregnant.
No.
I can sort of enjoy this time. And
somebody's been there and done that.
Right. Someone's done it before me.
Yeah.
And I would lose.
You don't like that.
I don't like that.
Well, sadly, we're out of time, but it's so easy and fun to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
To be inspired by you.
Oh, thank you.
I hope you'll come back afterwards.
I'd love to.
And share how the Labor Day goes.
We can meet him.
Yeah. Bring the little guy in.
Do you have any, do you have actor friends who have kids?
Yes.
Are they giving you advice?
Yes, lots. And it's so helpful. What I love is watching women still have a career after mm-hmm. they have children. Sometimes it's even better. And sometimes they don't want to go back to work and they take time off. But seeing the changes in people, right now I haven't experienced true motherhood. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how I'm going to feel. But right now I'm desperate to get back to work and back to my passion and doing the things that I love.
And you see that you can.
I see that I can, and I see that also maybe I won't want to. Yeah. And that's a nice thing to see as well. So, but it's been very helpful to watch many, many others go before me and manage it all.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for being here, Juliet. Thanks for hosting with us again.
Absolutely.
It's always fun to have
so
you.
Much fun.
Claire Holt, we're making a promise. We're going to come back and talk to you again after this baby gets here. But until then, I wish you lots of blessings and a lot of joy and excitement from this journey.
Thank you.
I'm always happy when nice people make little nice people.
Oh, thank
you. It makes me feel like the world's going to be okay.
I hope he turns into a little nice person.
A little gentleman.
At home, thanks for listening to our podcast. If you have suggestions, send them to info@informedpregnancy.com.
Give me the news. I got a whole lot of questions for you.